Well, I'm really excited to share the next 3 weeks with you. And the topic of what I'm going to be talking about is God's amazing love story. And this love story has become fresh to me in a new way over the last couple of years. And it's been something I've been thinking about and kind of meditating on. And the next 3 weeks, I'm going to be sharing it with you. Now, as we go through this story, we're going to build some eternal equations. I don't want to scare anybody here. These equations are like really simple, like something equals something. No math, no calculator needed. But these are equations that God's given us in the Bible that are our love equations, and they're eternal. And so we're going to bring those out, and I'm going to kind of keep those listed as we build those. And as I go through this, I'm assuming that you're a believer, that you've received the blood of Christ, God lives within you, and you've got that amazing love inside of you. So that's kind of what I'm starting with assuming. So if that's not true, then, you know, we would need to have a discussion on that. But given that assumption, let's begin. And let's just read this together if we could. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and prophets." So our first equation there, love is greatest. And so the word "is" means equal. And so according to God, he's saying that love is the greatest commandment. Love is the greatest thing that we as believers can do. And so I'm going to be talking a lot about what I think is the most important things that we need to be focusing on. And so to me, that's telling us very clearly that love is the greatest. All right, so I'm going to pray now, and I have to put that up there because sometimes I forget to pray. And then I'm going to try to pray at the end. And if anyone wants to volunteer to pray at the end, there will be an opportunity if God leads you to. There's the verses we're going to be covering. And so if you want those in advance, I will show them all up there so you don't have to go to them if you don't want to. But for those who do like to go to them, there they are. And BST, that's not a misspelling of BSF. BST is blood, sweat, and tears. And what I'll be sharing with you is really 2 years of blood, sweat, and tears for me personally. But it's going to come across maybe a lot, a little polished, like this may be just something I've just kind of been thinking about in a vacuum, but it's really been things I've been experiencing through blood, sweat, and tears. I may share a little bit of that with you as long as we go, but just want to kind of give you a context that this is things that has been more of an experience than anything. All right, we are ready for equation number 2. So here we go. What is the next one? We say, "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love." And then if you jump towards the end there, "In this is love, not that we have loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God. If we love one another, God abides in us, and his love is perfected in us." So, next one, God, love, equal. So first, love greatest, equal. God, love, equal. So when we think about God, when we think about love, we should think those together. All right. So, so far, everything looks cool, right? Love and, you know, everything feels good. There's a dark side to this story. It's not all love and fun and games, unfortunately. There's your dark side. There's an enemy coming. And the enemy is going to try to destroy this great, this God's amazing love story. So what is enemies? We're going to talk about three enemies today. So here's the first one. The enemy of love is hate. We can see this in this passage in Exodus, skipping to the halfway through. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. For you visual people, there's my little visual picture of a hate. In other words, you know, if I'm going to say, Andre, I hate you, that's pretty blatant, right? It's kind of like, you know, me doing, getting a gun out and shooting. It's pretty overt. Us Christians, and this is a lot of my journey has been in the Christian world, we don't do that too often, right? That's not probably something you've experienced. It can happen, but it's not where I think a lot of the enemy does his work in Christian, because we know I'm not supposed to point a gun and shoot it at Andre. But that is the kind of that first level of enemy territory is hating God, hating others. That's not love. Enemy number two, self. But understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self. And there's all kinds of other things that we will be as well. This one is really quite easy for me to see too. I mean, I've always known I'm a selfish person, but you know, that gets under the radar a little bit more, doesn't it? It's not as overt as saying you hate someone. What you're doing is, well, I'm just going to focus more on myself, so I'm not really going to focus on loving you. Now, the visual part there is a clock, and that came about because to me that's like a 24/7 enemy that's attacking me every day, every minute, because I'm always selfish, and so I've got to fight that enemy all the time. If I want to love God, if I want to love others, I need to all the time fight that enemy of self. That's just me personally. I don't want to speak for you guys. All right. Third enemy. Anyone curious what the third enemy is yet? Third enemy. All right. The third enemy is a little bit more involved. And first of all, let's talk about it before the fall. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. And then after the fall, then the eyes of both were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loincloths. So this one is kind of a combination of shame and fear. This one's a little more complicated. The picture there, poison. This is where I see a lot of enemy lines in the Christian world is through shame and fear, because like poison, it's under the covers, you know, it's under the radar. It's, I'm still Christian, and yet I give you shame, I give you fear. And that's an enemy of love. So if you look there, his man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. You know, what more could there be as far as no fear than to be naked in front of others and not ashamed? And that's God's perfect plan. That's the way the garden started, is that we can live in that type of love where we're perfectly naked. You know everything about me, and I'm not ashamed. That's the plan. Sin enters the world, and then they realize they were naked, and then they cover. And isn't that what we do when we feel that shame, is we cover? And so if we want to love someone, that love needs to be devoid of shame and of fear. In fact, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not been perfected in love. Something just to be thinking about is what, as you can see, I combine those two together for shear. You know, it's kind of like scissors. It just cuts. and I know we've all experienced it, but unfortunately, we've probably all been on the other end of that too, of dishing it. And it's sometimes we, I don't think we even realize it, but we know it happens. And it's something that I'm realizing I need to really put up my guard on, that I can give this poison to others sometimes without realizing it, or sometimes kind of like only partially realize. Now, it's not my intent, but through my tone, through my message, through my body language, I communicate that. You know, that was a dumb question. I'm not going to tell you that's a dumb question that you just asked me, but I'm going to look at you and I'm going to respond to you because I thought that was a dumb question. And so I'm going to shame you into thinking that that was a dumb question. So that's, you know, how we can communicate very subtly that type of fear in people, and then they're not going to want to ask another question, will they? Because I just shamed them into asking a question that I thought was a dumb question. That's just one example of how we can cause fear in other people. That's an enemy of love, because that does not bring about a spirit of fear where there's no fear in love. Anyone think that should be on the list? All right, so those are our enemies. What can we do to fight these enemies and win the battle? Well, my original title for this is What is Most Important? But that's kind of a left brain idea, you know, what is most important. Because I think what I'm going to be talking about are things that God is saying is most important. But then my right brain kicked in and said, God's amazing love story sounds really cool. So if you appeal to that one, you might like the right brain better. But it's really a story about what is God saying is most important. You know, the greatest is love. Love is the greatest. God is love. Your greatest commandment is to love others. This is what we need to be focusing on, and it's easy sometimes because we're so familiar with it to let it, you know, slip on it, and we forget about it and try to go on to other things. But we always need to be remembering God's word. This is the most important. And one enemy that we don't have is this isn't complicated. God didn't say, okay, and I'm going to make this complicated for you. It's not complicated. It's right there. God is love. Love is the greatest. There's no confusion there. So God didn't allow us to be confused about this very important principle. And so we shouldn't be confused by it. There's not complication to it. The enemies are more in that little box at the left. But let's make sure that we're clear in our mind what is most important to God, and that this is what his greatest priority is. And I think then that should be our greatest priority. Okay, so speaking of mind, it says we shall love the Lord with all your God with all your heart and with all your soul and your mind. I kind of alluded to a left brain and right brain. I'm going to kind of be talking about this stuff through the next 3 weeks, so I'll introduce a little bit of this here, but I think it's important to understand more how our minds work. And remember, who gave us our mind? God did. So it's not like we're just trying to figure this out and then as an intellectual exercise. God is the one that's designed us, okay? We're just trying to figure out God's design is all we're trying to do. And it's, you know, it's amazing. I'm not an expert in this stuff. I read about it, but I'm far from an expert. So left side, in general categories, the left brain is the rational, the language, the reasoning, the logic, the how, and the what. I want to explain to you how to do something. You know, let's work on a project. Let's dig deep and let's talk about the technicalities of this. That's kind of that left brain work. What is the right brain? So the right brain, relationships, emotions, most decisions are right brain. Now, I fought that one because I'm a left brain guy. And like the last thing I'm not a guy that makes decisions on emotions. I use reasoning when I decide. Well, the more I researched it and thought really about how I made decisions, I decided on most of those things in the right side. I justified it on the left side. But I first decided I'm going to buy this, I'm going to do this, and then if I needed to explain it to someone, I would jump over the left side and use that side of the brain. Now, why is this important? Well, there's a lot of reasons, but let me try to give you one that I think you might be interested in. You might not be interested in all this. Have you ever had a conversation with someone, maybe a child or coworker or someone, and you wanted to talk about how to do something? Let's talk about how to do this project. Let's, you know, talk about this. And in the course of that conversation, you hit a nerve in that other person. And then that other person responds with emotion. They respond in what you may think they're being illogical, they're being emotional, they're being unreasonable. And then that circle goes around about, you know, you're just being unemotional. And all you were trying to do to begin with was just try to get a project done. But somewhere in the course of that, emotion kicked in. Okay. I see a lot of nodding heads between spouses here. My spouse is over there. We'd be going, oh, yeah. So what's going on here? So you're starting out, you know, I just want to get this project done. So I'm on the left brain doing this project. But in doing so, somewhere in the course of, you know, relationships, in the course of action, you strike a nerve. Maybe you shame that person in what you said. It's like, that was a dumb question. But you didn't tell him it was a dumb question. You just thought it was a dumb question. And so you didn't really, you're not thinking too much about it, but, you know, you communicated that to that person, and they felt, you know, violated. They felt like, you don't respect my opinion. You don't care about my question. And so now that what's kicked in is that right side of the brain. Now that right side of the brain, that is so precious in God's eyes. They're both God's creation, but that right side, that is where you read the Gospels. That's when you read about the prodigal son. The prodigal son was not about irrational the son was irrational. But the son did not feel like he belonged. And it was about belonging. And it was about relationships. Those are things, if you go through the gospel, it's a wonderful thing to look at things kind of anew and say, is God trying to speak to my right side or to my left side? And you'll see that God's communication is so much, he values that right side of who we are. He's created us, and that is very precious. And we need to protect that part of us and others. And so when we're communicating with someone and we think we're trying to work on something and we slip over and we make them question whether they belong or whether they have value, you can see why that would kick a nerve, because now all of a sudden they feel left out. And as, you know, like for me, I'm just sitting here on the left side just, you know, what's going on here? You know, where did this all happen? And in my insensitivity to what I'm communicating, I have caused someone else not to feel like they belong. And, you know, then that's where the enemy can come in and cause confusion. It wasn't often rarely was it my intent to do that, but that's happened, and that's where the enemy comes to kill and steal and destroy. And so I think as we understand how God's made us, and we're all individuals, so this is just kind of like food for thought that you guys can chew on, but think about your own situations, your own struggles. How does God, how can you understand this and be better effective communicating? Because now, as more I understand it, what it's forcing me to do is not just think about this for me, but think about this for the person I'm communicating with. How am I communicating this so that they are not feeling like they don't belong? And, you know, maybe I will even be correcting someone. I want to correct you on this one item, but I'm not saying you don't belong. And so, you know, you have to dance through that conversation, and you have to be sensitive to how they're responding and be careful. And if you see them starting to misinterpret what you're trying to say, then I need to, you know, call a timeout. And so this has really opened up new ways that I've thought about communicating with others and helps explain to me where a lot of conflict has arisen, is this battle right here between the two. The interesting thing is that language is not on that right side. So it's, and I think guys feel this, is that, you know, we love our wives, you know, it's kind of like, but we don't have that ability to put those thoughts into words. We feel it, but we can't necessarily communicate it. And so, you know, we may come out with something, but it's just never like right. You know, it never explains that love. That's the challenge, is to, when we feel something, then to find the words that we got to kind of go over to the other side of the brain to get those words that express those thoughts. Or maybe you're angry. You feel that anger, but it's hard to communicate that. And again, it's you're having to go back and forth between those two, and that's not easy. If you've ever taken surveys, sometimes they'll tell you not to overthink something. They want you to answer it on the right side, because again, that's where we make decisions, and that's how we often live. And so we don't want to overthink things, and so that just kind of is shows how our brains are wired. Okay, here's another element of these greatest these eternal equations. Here it says, "And I will make you a great nation." This is God talking to Abraham. "And I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing." So in the right there, you see that summation there. What this is about is these eternal equations, God is love, they mean more when we can add them up together. So like when we fellowship together here, that adds up more love than it does if we try to do them individually. You know, I know if I was worshiping individually, my music would not sound anything like what we've got here. And I wouldn't be able to hear everyone's voices. You know, that's just one example, but you can see that there's power in community. So when you embrace love as a family, that's got more power than the individuals in the family. When you embrace love as a fellowship, way more power than the individuals in the fellowship. And so as you look at ways to express that love, look at doing it in community, because, you know, God says, "I'm going to make you a great nation." Not a great individual, a great nation. So he's built the body of Christ to love as a group of people. All right, so here's the application. I'm not going to make this really easy, because I want you guys to actually think through this. You have three levels here. You could think about it, meditate on it. That's good. You have the Bible verses, you can look them up. Next level, what do others think? "Honey, do I always show love to you, dear?" You know, if we're supposed to love others, right, it kind of makes sense that their vote counts. You know, it's like, "Oh, I loved you. Yeah, I love you." Well, I didn't feel your love. So if you really want to get a good feedback there, ask the people whom you think you're loving. And that's better than just you thinking about it. And then the best one is to look up, and I'm going to be covering 1 Corinthians 13 next week. And so I'm asking you to read it ahead of time. And if God prompts you to share, or where you feel like God's given you an insight into all of this, I would ask that you would share it next week. I'll give you an opportunity to do that, but only if you really think God is leading you to. And if God is leading you to, I don't care how small it is or how big it is or anything like that, please share it. And if you don't feel like sharing it in front of anyone, just tell me and I can share it. But I'm just asking you to be praying about this stuff. Open your eyes to what God is teaching you. And if there's something you think that he's asking you to share with him, with the group, I want to make that a blessing to others. But only if you think God's leading you to. All right. So Valentine's Day is coming up soon, right? And this may seem like, oh, this is just a nice little Valentine story. It's not. In fact, I wasn't even planning it to be around Valentine's Day. I almost wished it was not. because it just seems like, oh, it's Valentine's Day, let's talk about love. This is a story about what is most important. And if there was a most important day, I'd want to do it on that day. It just happened to be on Valentine's Day, so you can apply it now. But I don't want you to think that this was just a Valentine's story. I think God's amazing love story far exceeds anything that the world offers as far as replications of that. And Valentine's Day is great. I love it. But this is much more than that. And so, blood, sweat, and tears. I've got a couple minutes. Is that right, Andy? Okay. I was not planning on sharing this until this morning, and I've actually never shared this before. So, but I felt God, as I was leading through that blood and sweat and tears, I thought, you've got to make this a little bit more real here and open up a window of this blood, sweat, and tears. Not literally blood, but the sweat and tears were literal. The blood just kind of goes with it. I've got several people who work for me and work in my company, and, there's a couple of them that are just like superstar performers. And then I've got, everyone is just amazing. They really are. They're like cream of the crops. But there's those that are at the top. And people in my leadership came to me once and they said, Dave, these people at the top are really good, but these other people are important as well. And sometimes you don't necessarily think that, or you don't necessarily communicate that. You just kind of focus on the ones that are the top of the line. So I thought, oh, okay, that was good feedback. Well, one day I was sitting at our office and we had a pizza party and we had people from out of town, college students from Northwestern came in and they were just sitting there and we're all just having pizza. And I'm just going through talking to them. They're all kind of fun guys. And I'm just kind of sitting there thinking, and all of a sudden I just took a moment and I feel like the Holy Spirit just convicted me, but I realized I was evaluating these guys and checking them off, not qualified. And these were guys I'd just met, and it was just in the, it was silly things, and yet in my mind I had this standard of measuring up, and none of these guys met that standard. And I realized how judgmental I was in that. And I thought, when I stopped and really evaluated, what was I judging them on? I realized this was just silly that I was judging. I came to this point where I was judging these guys on their qualifications at a pizza, And then I thought more about that. I thought about the comment, my colleagues had said. And then I thought about other situations. And I realized there's a pattern here. And one of the things that kind of struck with me was that, I've never been a person that makes friends easily. And I've always kind of wondered, why is that? I've had enough friends where I've gotten over the radar where people aren't worried about me. Oh, he has no friends. But, I was never one of those guys that just easily made friends. And I always wondered, in high school, I was kind of a goody two-shoes. So it's like, okay, that explains it. No one likes, who likes to hang around with goody two-shoes? And then, later I was like, okay, I'm a geek. Geeks aren't popular yet. So that's... And there's some of this that's probably all true, but I started really thinking about this seriously, and I realized that there's a root cause there that is repelling other people through that judgment, and that this, this process is going on that usually is kind of subconsciously, or it just kind of is always there, but I don't necessarily think about it, but. There's a part of me where that darkness existed, and I thought that was a contributor to that, and it was really humbling to think that that had been part of me for a long time, and I'd never really had, connected the dots. It was a difficult pill to swallow, but I was thankful that it's like, okay, now I can work on this. God, relieve me of this. And I think about the song we sang today as far as making a difference. God's made a difference in my life from that. Another difficult pill to swallow was when I then noticed that this seed of darkness got passed on to the next generation. And I realized that seed came probably from me. And it's like, oh, that consequence of that. It's not just my problem now. I've passed that sin on to another generation. And that's, that's still in progress. But it just tells me, how important this stuff. So when we say this is the most important stuff, intellectually, I know all this. We all know there's no new facts here we don't know about. But it's how important this is in God's economy to building a great nation, to be building a community and a fellowship. So, I was looking at people kind of on the left side, thinking that type of person is superior, and then people on the right side, not as superior. And yet, who am I to judge? So the good news is I feel like God's given me a spirit where I really desire to love people as they are. And it's a work in progress, but that's what I want that amazing love story to be. And I see that what wonderful great thing we could do as a body if we could be those types of people that really love people in a way that makes a difference.